We've been working through the book of Genesis and studied the creation stories, Adam and Eve, Noah and the flood, and even some of the initial stories about Abraham and his wife Sarah. Now, Abraham, as we know, has been called the father of many nations, and we were told that he was blessed to be a blessing. As Abraham is portrayed in the Bible, we find someone who openly talks to God, sometimes with an air of doubt or questioning, sometimes with open praise. Abraham, at some points in his narrative, is someone who we find deeply concerned about justice. And yet at the same time, it's someone who didn't always see the completeness of that work for justice in his own life. Abraham was someone who made mistakes, is portrayed sometimes as rather greedy or even cowardly. And we find someone who has a rather complex and sometimes less than exemplary record. The same is true for his wife, Sarah. At times in Sarah's story, we find her courage is at a level of miraculous. We find an audacious laughter that helps us to question reality and a faithfulness that can be inspiring. And yet, at the same time in the Bible, she is also portrayed sometimes as being petty, envious, and worse than even one of those reality TV shows about housewives. And her treachery could even keep up or surpass the Kardashians. Both Sarah and Abraham really struggle in the book of Genesis to claim God's promises in their lives. And the power of the Bible and the way they portray it is that the Bible does not filter out the struggles or the flaws of Sarah and Abraham. Instead, they become a real human foil for us to deal with in our own struggles of faith. And today's story is probably one of those biggest foils of all. And so I want to introduce some new characters into our story so far here in Genesis as we meet Hagar and Ishmael. Who was Hagar? Well, she was introduced back in Genesis 16. And that is at a point in the story of Sarah and Abraham where Sarah and Abraham have been told that they will have a child, but years go by and their promise is left unfulfilled. So Sarah tries to solve this problem herself. Now, I think it's important for us to understand the cultural norms at that time, which of course don't justify the behaviors, but help us understand this rather strange ancient world that we're stepping into. In the days of Sarah and Abraham, there was a polygamous culture. Households did have slaves and servants. Women were treated as property. And the head wife, who in this case was Sarah, had a duty in her marriage vows to her husband to provide a male heir. And if she was unable to fulfill her contract, she was obligated to find a way. Often in the days of Sarah and Abraham, the way that this contract would be fulfilled would be by having the head wife give a servant to her husband so that this new person could fulfill the duty. And this is what Sarah chooses. This is why we meet Hagar. She was an Egyptian slave of Sarah's. And Sarah offers Hagar to Abraham as a wife. Hagar does have a son with Abraham, and he is named Ishmael. And this infuriates Sarah. And we learn that even though Hagar may be named as a wife, there is not mutuality in this marriage. And there is not even mutuality with the other wives. Sarah still outranks her and is allowed to treat her however she chooses, which creates both terrifying and disturbing encounters in Genesis 16 and 21. And in our story today, we find one of these horrible encounters. where last week's heroine of our story, Sarah, now shows her darker side, her own capabilities to act with contempt and maliciousness. You see, in Genesis 21, we're now at a point where Sarah has her own beloved child, Isaac, who is now a toddler and we hear has been weaned. And Sarah is jealous of Hagar and her son Ishmael because technically Ishmael is older than Isaac, and Sarah considers him a threat. And because Sarah has the power of even life and death, she is able to control Hagar's fate, casting her out because of Sarah's own jealousy. And that's what she does in our scripture reading today. Sarah convinces Abraham to throw Hagar and Ishmael out of the household. And this is basically a death sentence. Let's make no bones about it. They are caught. They are forced to leave the safety and security of the household code. They're sentenced into the wilderness with basically nothing. And just when they are about to die of thirst, God intervenes. We read in Genesis 21, verses 17 and 18, "And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, 'What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him.' Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink." In that scripture reading, we learn that we have a rescue for Hagar and Ishmael, no thanks to Sarah, but because of God's intervention and care. Ishmael and Hagar are given a new start by God. And Ishmael is able to become a mighty hunter, marry, and become the father of another great culture himself. So this morning, I want us to stop and remember the power of Hagar's story and the importance of her presence in the biblical narrative. Her witness is so powerful. And think about it. Why didn't the biblical authors censor out or omit this story? Why not portray Sarah and Abraham as the perfect heroes? After all, Abraham is the father of many nations, the one we look up to as being blessed to be a blessing. Well, the Bible reminds us that the real power of the story of the Bible is that it does not filter out the struggles and flaws of Sarah and Abraham. They become that real human foil for us to deal with in our own struggles of faith. By giving their whole story, Sarah and Abraham invite us into the fullness of being human and cause us to wrestle with both the goodness and the evil that exists in every single one of us, recognizing that, like them, we too are capable of all things, and that only God is the one we can truly worship and adore. Even more than that, in the power of Hagar's story, we are reminded that God sees all of this and wants us to see all of this as well. And so let's go back and think a little bit more about Hagar's story and legacy as a witness to us. In Genesis 16, when we meet Hagar and she has her first terrifying encounter with Sarah, when she flees for safety, we learn that she encounters God, and when she does, she becomes the first in the biblical narrative to name God. Think about that for just a moment. She is the first one in our Bible to give God a name. And what is the name that she gives God? El Roy, which in Hebrew means the God who sees, or the God who sees me live. And not only does Hagar name God in that moment as the God who sees, but God says to Hagar, "You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. You will name him Ishmael, because the Lord has heard about your harsh treatment. God names Hagar's child yet to be Ishmael, which means God heard. Let's repeat that again. God heard. Phyllis Tribble, in her book Text of Terror, speaks of the power of Hagar as a symbol of the oppressed. As she writes, from the beginning, Hagar is powerless. She's kept in her place, a slave woman who is the innocent victim of abuse and rejection. And as a symbol of the oppressed, Hagar becomes many things to many people. Most especially, all sorts of rejected women find their stories in her. Joan Chittister, when preaching at the National Cathedral in June of 2008, wrote this about our story in Genesis 21. We must always remember that Abraham was wrong. It was Sarah and Abraham who wanted Hagar sent out. It was not God. God, after all, rescued Hagar and Ishmael from Abraham's selfish, sinful hand. Clearly, the will of God is not violence and oppression. It is love and care, mercy and justice, community and compassion for everyone. That is God's will. Today, Hagar, Sarah, and Abraham remind us of just that. Clearly, the will of God is not violence and oppression. It is love and care, mercy and justice, community and compassion for everyone. That is God's will. Whenever we go back to the book of Genesis and we are reminded of the creator of this universe, we are reminded by Hagar that we encounter the God who sees, the God who hears. And right from the beginning, we are taught that through the chaos and the messiness of this life, all are seen and heard by God, and that we are called to see and hear it too, and find ways to help one another break free. We too are reminded, like the angel who spoke to Hagar in Genesis 21, to say to one another, and remember that God says to us, what troubles you? Do not be afraid, for God has heard your voice where you are. This day we remember God hears us where we are. God is concerned with what troubles this world. God speaks up saying, do not be afraid, I hear you. I will provide for you. I will make a way for you and set you free. And so it is with a sense of honor and deep gratitude that this day we have time to think and pray and give thanks for the work of breaking free, and for the work that this congregation has put into supporting this vital ministry, a ministry committed to seeing and hearing, a ministry committed to reaching out and finding out what troubles those in need, for hearing what their voices are and helping them find a new step, knowing that God is with them and that we are with them. I invite you now to listen and learn more about breaking free and how you can contribute as well.